And our last speaker is Dr. Talithia Darrington, who is an early child researcher with the Center for Education and Human Services with the Education Division with SRI International. And her kind of research areas of expertise is that she has led many projects that are federally and privately funded relating to examining substance use disorders among women of childbearing age, prenatally drug and exposed infants, early intervention, service access and engagement, and also early intervention systems development. And she will be speaking today on birth hospitals' role in access to early intervention services among drug exposed infants. Come on up.
I wanted to thank everyone for their flexibility. We were just talking about increasing your heart rate. I had a chance to decrease my heart rate by having a little more time, and a big shout out to the AV people here for rescuing my presentation. It would have been kind of boring without the graph slides that I'll be showing. So the policy context of my study is that it's centered on two pieces of federal legislation, the 2003 Keeping Children and Families Safe Act, which is better known by its precursor law, CAPTA, or the Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act. And that required hospitals to refer drug-exposed infants to child welfare. The 2004 Individuals with Disabilities Education Improvement Act required states to develop early intervention referral policies and procedures for children under the age of 3 who, quote, are identified as affected by illegal substance abuse or withdrawal symptoms resulting from prenatal drug exposure, end quote. The problem is that states don't have any data that document the extent to which these children are already accessing services and who is missed and what are the predictors of referral. The IDEA also requires states to have a public awareness program to increase early identification and referral by primary referral sources, especially hospitals and physicians. And the IDEA also requires states to develop those same kinds of referral policies and procedures for children who have a substantiated case of maltreatment. So they're referred to child welfare, and then they get a substantiated case. The law requires them to be referred to early intervention. So both pieces of these federal legislation have laid the policy foundation whereby hospitals could play a central role in connecting drug-exposed infants to early intervention. So my first study question was, what are the rates and trends of early intervention, or EI, referrals by hospitals among drug-exposed infants born from 1998 to 2005? And my second study question was whether any of the following were predictors of referral. So neonatal abstinence syndrome, or NAS diagnosis, toxicology screen results, insurance type, maternal race, ethnicity, hospital maternity level of care, and birth hospital discharge status. So to identify my study population, I developed the Drug Exposed Infant Identification Algorithm, DEIIA, using the Pregnancy to Early Life Longitudinal PEL data system here in Massachusetts. PEL has a set of core linkages between birth certificates and the hospital delivery discharge record of the mother and the birth discharge record of the child. So I examined 624,269 live births from 1998 to 2005. And I used the longitudinal linkages to the maternal prenatal hospital records for inpatient stays, observational stays, and emergency department visits, and linkages to the child's post-birth hospital visits to age 3 with a focus on visits occurring in the neonatal period. And among all those linked record sets, I identified indicators of prenatal drug exposure, and I found that 7,348 children had indicators of exposure, which represents 1.2% of this birth cohort. Then PEL also has early linkages to early intervention service records. So I looked at those from 1998 to 2008 to see if the child was ever referred to early intervention. And I found that just under 61% of the children were referred. My analytic methods included identifying the child's referral source and looking at children who were referred by hospitals, and then looking at overall referral and referral by hospitals, comparing pre- to post-mandate children born in the pre- to post-mandate periods to look at differences in referral using chi-squared and time series analyses. The predictors of referral were identified using generalized estimating equations with logic link, so a logistic regression that controls for the clustering in birth hospitals. I was interested in determining if the effect of having an NAS diagnosis or a positive toxicology screen varied across insurance type or hospital level of maternity care, so I interacted those variables. I and Norton have demonstrated that the effects in a nonlinear model are not correctly estimated by the coefficients in the model. So they proposed formulas for the magnitudes and standard errors to correct those estimates, and I performed those here. And then finally, normally the way you interpret a fact is by exponentiating the coefficient to get an odds ratio, but you can't do that on an interaction coefficient. So what I did is I calculated the mean predicted probabilities for the groups involved in the interaction, and then I took the difference in differences, which will make more sense when I show you the slides that you almost didn't get to see. So here are the pre to post mandate changes in referral. The left set of columns show all DEI births from all referral sources. The light blue column shows that 59% of the children born in the pre-mandate period were referred, and that increased to 66% of the children born in the post-mandate period. The middle set of columns show that 12% of these births were referred by hospitals, and that increased to 17% in the post-mandate period. And then the right set of columns show that 21% of children born in the pre-mandate period, increasing to 25% of the children born in the post-mandate period, were among all referrals, those that were referred by hospitals. So it's the share of referrals that were made by hospitals. All of these differences were significant, but you can see that in the post-mandate results, more than one-third of children were never referred. Only 1 in 5 of these children were referred by a hospital, and only 25% of children who were ever referred were referred by hospitals. So this shows the results of the time series analyses. The top line shows the number of births. The first thing you need to do is control for the number of births, because referrals could change just because you have a change in the number of births. So I found that there was a significant increase in the number of births over the overall study period, which parallels national survey data showing increase in this. And there was, interestingly, an acceleration in the post-mandate period, not related to the mandate, but just that's the context against which we have to look at referrals. So the middle line, which is light green, shows the number of referrals controlling for the number of births. And for that, we see that there is an increase in the number of referrals over the overall period, but there was no change in association with the mandate. So this, the left set of bars that I just showed you, that was not due to the mandate per se. It was due to an overall increase in the study period. I didn't show it on this slide because there was no, so the middle set of columns, there was no association after controlling for the number of drug-exposed infant births. That 12 to 17% increase was not significant. But the right set of columns was. The bottom line shows that there was no change in the pre-mandate period, but there was an acceleration in the post-mandate period, which amounted to 3.5 more referrals a year if you look at the share of referrals that are made by hospitals. So basically, the share of hospital referrals increased slightly in the post-mandate period. So all of the variables that I was interested in were predictors of referral. The green shows good or expected outcomes. The yellow shows a disparity for the reference group in the comparison, and red shows a disparity for the comparison group. So children with a neonatal abstinence syndrome diagnosis had 2.5 times higher odds of referral than those who did not have a diagnosis, and children with a positive tox screen were 1.5 times higher odds of referral than those with a negative toxicology screen, and you would expect that. All of these children did have indicators of drug exposure, but these are the indicators that are most salient at birth. For public, for insurance, I found that those with private insurance had a disparity. Comparing public versus private, publicly insured infants were 2.4 had 2.4 times higher odds of referral, and those with no insurance had 1.9 times higher odds of referral. For the maternal race ethnicity, the only difference was for drug-exposed infants born to Asian Pacific Islander mothers, and they had 50% lower odds of referral than children who were born to non-Hispanic white mothers. Children who were born in well-baby nurseries had 30% lower odds of referral than those who were born in hospitals with neonatal intensive care units, and there was no difference for children born in special care nurseries versus NICUs. Children who were transferred to a higher level of care facility at birth versus discharged home to parental care had 2.5 times greater odds of referral, and those who were discharged with home health had 1.5 times greater odds of referral than those who were discharged home with parental care. And at the bottom, you may not be able to see it, but those other factors I controlled for were birth weight, gestational age, clinical risk factors for EI eligibility, conditions establishing EI eligibility like Down syndrome, maternal characteristics beyond race, ethnicity like age, education, and nativity, whether the mom had custody of the infant, where she lived in Massachusetts, and whether it was a rural or urban region, and neighborhood poverty. So here are the interaction results. I found that the 250% increase in referral probability, that the main effect of the neonatal abstinence syndrome diagnosis was moderated by what type of insurance the child had. So we see in each set of these columns, the blue shows kids with a NAS diagnosis, and the white is no NAS. So there's an increased probability of referral for all three types of insurance, but it's a smaller effect size for those with no insurance, and it's a larger effect size for those with public insurance compared to those with private insurance. So the difference between those differences is how you assess the effect of the, or the magnitude of the interaction effect. So the no versus private comparison was significant. The public versus private was not significant. I also found that maternity level of care influenced or moderated the effect of NAS diagnosis. Children born in well-baby hospitals had a smaller effect, and children born in special care nurseries had a slightly smaller effect than those born in neonatal intensive care, in hospitals with neonatal intensive care units. The well-baby versus the NICU comparison was significant, so that difference in differences was statistically significant. So turning to toxicology screens, I found that the 50% increase in odds of referral was moderated by type of insurance. Here we have an interesting finding. We have the expected increase in referral probability associated with a positive screen if you had no insurance or if you had public insurance. But if you had private insurance, you actually had lower probability of referral if you had a positive screen. And the maternity level care also moderated this effect. Children, here we see the same positive effect for all three types of hospitals, but it was smaller for children born in well baby hospitals and larger for children born in special care nursery hospitals than those born in hospitals with NICUs. And both of these comparisons were significant. So my conclusions are that drug-exposed infant access to early intervention is suboptimal. More than one-third of the children who were born in the post-mandate period were not referred. So basically, it indicates the need to address the issue at the state and local level as well as the federal level to improve access. I identified these children using birth certificate and hospital data, which hospital staff have access to. So the hospitals could identify and refer most DEI, but I found that they referred fewer than 1 in 5 in the post-mandate period. So these results suggest the need for general program improvement for all birth hospitals, and specifically to accelerate that weak upward trend that I showed you in the time series analysis. Thirdly, referrals of drug-exposed infants with NAS or positive toxicology screens should not vary across non-clinical factors. All children with NAS should be referred as specified in the federal law, and children with positive screens, that's an indicator that they were exposed, so they should be referred as well. And I mean, it could be that the type of drug is why people are referring or not referring, but research shows that even prescription drugs used as prescribed, like anti-seizure medications, antidepressants, can have a negative effect on the child's CNS development, so their development should be monitored. And different types of insurance should not be related to differences in referral for those with NAS or positive tox screens. Other studies have shown that non-clinical factors like SES can be more influential than clinical factors in decisions to perform the tox screen in the first place. So it's possible that this study extends those findings to show that non-clinical factors also play a role in response to a positive tox screen once it is referred. Further study is needed to elucidate those reasons and find out if that's the case. And the finding that children with NAS and positive tox screens that were born in well baby hospitals were referred at much lower rates than those who were born in higher level of care hospitals indicates the need for targeted program improvement for those well baby hospitals. The limitations of the study, basically it was a secondary data analysis of administrative data. There is a potential under ascertainment of referral. The linkage rate for the early intervention in the overall Pell data system is 84%, which is similar to other studies. But drug-exposed infants may have a lower linkage rate because they have greater levels of adoption and mobility, which makes it challenging to create linkages. I couldn't assess this because of our data use agreement, but it's a possibility that more than 61% of these children were referred. I couldn't assess the validity of key measures, specifically the referral source and early intervention data, or the toxicology screen results on the birth certificate. In fact, Massachusetts is the only state that records this on the birth certificate, but I actually just found a study that would suggest that states might consider recording this information and linking it on a population-wide level. The study showed that linked toxicology screens were an important addition to health data and diagnostic data to identify individuals with substance use disorders. So the implications for research and policy are that hospitals could play a significant role and be a potential universal referral source, but we need policies to encourage their referral. Perhaps the DEIIA could be useful in that regard, but it requires further testing to increase its utility as an epidemiological research tool. And this study demonstrates the utility of longitudinally linked data systems, more of which are needed across the nation for research such as this to inform program improvement and policy. And to reiterate, we need additional research on EI referrals by hospitals. You know, why are DEI born to mothers with private insurance not being referred as often? And why is private insurance related to different referral patterns for children with NAS or positive toxicology screens? I wanted to acknowledge the studies dedicated to my late chair, Dr. Lorraine Vogel-Clerman, who is a champion of public health as well as of students. My dissertation committee members, Dr. Kottelschuk is here today. Hopefully I've got it right. I'd like to acknowledge my dissertation funding support from the Nancy Lurie Marks Institute on Disability Policy Fellowship and grants from the Heller Alumni Association and the Office of the Provost. And I probably should have said this at the beginning, but I have no financial interests or other disclosures. I appreciate your attention. That's my email, talithadarrington@sri.com. The website there is daisycenter.org. That's the center I'm working with to provide technical assistance to states to develop those longitudinally linked data systems that I'm talking about. If you're curious about the statistics I was talking about, there's a couple references there, I and Norton. And if you're curious about the algorithm, then that's the reference for you there. And these are actually posted as handouts, which is what saved me today. So thank you very much.